Good evening, I am Josh Beiser from GameWisdom.com, and this is another episode of the Perceptive Podcast. Tonight, I am joined by a friend of mine who we have played so many games together, from Left 4 Dead, Dota, Payday, etc., and we're going to be talking about strategy game design, specifically with tactical elements involved in strategy as well. So I'm going to let him introduce himself. I know him by Thorn, but I'll let you start things off.
Hello, I'm Thorn, or Alex Sleds. I'm a big co-op player, as sure as you know at this point. I'm kind of surprised I'm not here to talk about Left 4 Dead today, but
that could be like a 2-hour conversation considering all the time we put into that.
True, only 2 hours.
Well, yeah, it's great to talk with you, Alex. I know we've been talking on a lot of games we've been playing for a while. I know you've had a chance to look at Game Wisdom over, the last few months. What do you think of the site and everything?
I think it's pretty cool. I'm not very knowledgeable on what makes, what's popular. I don't like Hearthstone. I don't understand it. I don't like Heroes of the Storm. Don't understand it. I barely watch... The only real competitive games I watch would be the Total War series and then a little bit of the EVE series, which has not gone well. Mm-hmm. So and, I'm the wrong person to ask on that.
Yep. So Alex over here is the one who sort of got me set up with doing the Twitch streaming a few weeks ago. We spent an afternoon trying to get all those crazy settings together. So thank you on that. And I know you've been enjoying some of the things I've done with like the Darkest Dungeon streaming. I know you watch, by the time this recording goes up, I did a stream of Stonehearth a while ago.
Yeah, I ended up sitting in on that and watching. That was pretty cool. I'm really excited about, I'm a big fan of Dwarf Fortress. I'm always looking for the next Dwarf Fortress.
Mm-hmm. Yep, and Dwarf Fortress is definitely considered the king of the genre. I mean, many people just call the Dwarf Fortress genre now these days. It's sort of become the evolution of very hardcore city builder type games.
To be honest, for me, it's my favorite RPG. It's my favorite story game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And part of the allure of Dwarf Fortress and the games we'll talk about is being able to get into those very minute details of managing and controlling the aspects of your characters, especially the customization and personalization aspects of things. But I think the best place to start with would probably be one of the first examples of the types of games we're going to be talking about that combine strategy and tactical gameplay. And that would, of course, be XCOM. And that would be the original XCOM. I think that was 1990, 1991. Although I don't remember the exact date. But this was a very popular game. One of the first to really combine strategic and tactical gameplay. And I think that brings me to probably the first question I have for you, Alex. Since you've played a lot of these genres and these types of games, what do you consider to be the difference between a strategy game and the difference between a tactical game?
Strategy games usually end up being either very, very complex turn-based, whereas a tactical game usually involves a smaller setup mm-hmm. and then a much smaller conclusion. So, for example, something like Europa Universalis, pretty much, if you want to, you can sit there on pause and take 45 minutes to do, maybe a month or two's in-game time worth of work with managing your people, managing everything. Whereas in something like a tactical game, something like XCOM, something like a Total War game, you're really just kind of putting a setup in, and the meat of the game comes from the battle phase. It comes from what happens when you hit that combat.
Mm-hmm. All right. Yep, and we can see a lot. I think this is the conversation we had before the cast in how the type of tactical management or those types of details have really found themselves, I guess I could say they bled into a lot of other genres and a lot of other different games. I know you mentioned there's now a strategy or tactical side of playing FIFA now with the management mode and stuff like that.
Yeah, that Football Manager, you can even take something something like Call of Duty, where they're bleeding a little bit of that into it. I'm really excited about a lot of that strategy bleeding into other genres, such as the FPS and the RTS.
Mm-hmm. Now, when we say that it's bleeding in, or we're seeing these elements in, like, a first-person shooter, for people listening, what type of games would you consider to be an example of that, or even just an example of the design that you're looking for?
It gets a little iffy in terms of tactics. For the best tactical FPS I've ever seen is Heroes and Generals on Steam, or the reasonably obscure Dust 514 on the PS3. Yes. Yes, I played that. Which essentially take the FPS mode, and they say, okay, we're going to put an economy behind this. We're going to make sure that there's something linking each battle you do to some sort of either overmap or economy system. So, for instance, in Heroes and Generals, it's reenacting World War II, mm-hmm. where, you know, if you were in the FPS and you bought a tank and you lose the tank, that's a big hit on your money. You might not be able to bring a tank next map. Mm-hmm. And you also see this in PlanetSide 2, but it's a little more time-based as opposed to the money base, just mm-hmm. because you gain resources every second.
Yeah. So, really, when we're talking about, like, the tactical elements sort of find their way into other genres, it's more about almost like a persistent metagame that we see in these games, like something to tie these individual battles together, which, like, we go back to XCOM, that would be how the resources and things you find while you're battling gets brought back to your base, which you can sell, you can research, get new stuff, and then you take it back to the tactical battles, and it's just this cycle of growth and progression.
Yes, absolutely. So, for instance, if you're the biggest link between the battles and essentially the campaign of XCOM is the classes you bring into it. Mm-hmm. So you can upgrade your gun, you know, that's fine. It gives you a small, you know, statistical advantage. Maybe you put some armor on, maybe you've got grenades. Mm-hmm. That doesn't really change the crux of how you're playing. Something like losing your best sniper in a battle, going into that campaign mode and saying, what do I have to replace a sniper for this next battle? I don't have any more snipers. Maybe you get something like an assault, something that's going to, you know, you're going to have to play a more movement-based game. You're going to have to play faster and closer in. Mm-hmm. That's changing your battles. That's that link in action. And that's one of the reasons why I think XCOM's campaign is really what holds it.
Mm-hmm. And for those of you listening, when you're bringing up XCOM right now, you're referring to XCOM Enemy Unknown, right? The Firaxis.
Correct. The remake of, I believe, 2 years ago?
I don't even know. I'm horrible with dates, so I always forget that. Let's take a look. I know it's been
so many have come out.
They did the first game, then they did the expansion. Let's take a look. It came out in 2012.
Wow. So 3 years ago.
Yeah. Oh, man. Yeah, the campaign was definitely a strong part of that, although few people, including myself, felt that the campaign was a little too rigidly structured in how it sort of locked your options. For instance, you always knew at the end of the month there's going to be a terror mission. In the original game, those things were just completely left up to chance. So you never knew what was going to happen, and that sort of let you have a lot more options and variability in how the campaign would play out.
I never was really affected too much by that. Part of that might be my play style. Mm-hmm. I never took XCOM as an incredibly serious undertaking. Mm-hmm. I felt it was more, for me, it was a story game. It was a journey. It was, you know, these are your soldiers. Do the best you can. Mm-hmm. It wasn't so much about the winning, because I didn't play on classic difficulty, classic Iron Man. I played on, I believe it was normal, and I shifted a bit to Iron Man, but I mostly just went for the second wave mod, that really big mod that just kind of blew everything out of the water, which was fine with me. You know, I beat the game twice. Really enjoyed it, and then put on that mod, beat another 2 times. It was good stuff.
Also, with XCOM and the tactical side of things, you mentioned, of course, getting into the details of your various units or your various soldiers on the field. And that kind of, like, tweaking and personalizing your strategies has become a very popular part of tactical style games. And it also lends itself to what we're talking about with the metagame progression that we're seeing in other genres, where you can actually get down to the details and say, oh, I want to give my guy enhanced assault rifle perk, and then maybe I'll unlock something new, and then I can tweak him even further.
Yeah, it's changing the way you play, and it's also changing the definition of winning on your part.
Mm-hmm.
If you were in something like Counter-Strike, you know, you must win. Whoever gets 16 rounds first, you're the winner. You know, you've got it. There's no, you either won or you lost. Whereas something like XCOM, or again, some of those, you know, Heroes and Generals, you can say, well, I lost, but, you know, maybe two of your men made it out alive. Or even you won, but it was such a costly victory, you've lost maybe three or four of your soldiers, that it's almost a loss.
Yeah. And that's really the key move there when you talk about XCOM, and how you can have a loss that at least gained you some momentum, or, you know, a very, very poor win. Like, if you lose your three best squaddies in a map on XCOM and the Unknown, that's pretty much a bullet to the head for your organization.
Well, it depends on how you play. I ended up getting the DLC, the Armor Color DLC, and this is my favorite DLC of all time, for the sole purpose of color coding each nation. So each one of my squads, you know, all they would have is, you know, they're whatever class they are, and then they're a random name from a random country.
Mm-hmm.
And those, just that random country, I latched onto that. And, you know, let's say, oh, no, there's, you know, there's aliens invading in Germany. Well, I'd better look at who's in my German squad. Maybe some British people, and they're the people from France, and that's who I picked. I didn't pick, you know, the best sniper every time. I picked who was the closest, who was invested in that.
Nice.
And so it turned into a whole different game for me, all because of just our color armor and a single variable.
Mm-hmm. And that type of detail, again, you can really get attached to your units, and even attached to your character. When we talk about, like, first-person shooters with, like, a perk system or metagame, has been very instrumental in raising that popularity. Because, again, when you're able to start to tie these elements together into a long-standing or multiple-match segment, it just gives you a greater investment compared to a game like Counter-Strike, where there's no real connection between the various matches. Nothing that you do 20 minutes ago is going to affect how you're playing the game in this match, or, you know, your match 5 days from now, etc. And another perfect example of that would really be, like, League of Legends and Dota, and how they tie matches through matchmaking. They tie matches through, like, persistent outfits and little effects you can add to your characters. And all this is designed to really give that personalization element to your game.
Yeah, tying in especially the MMR system, making it a big shiny goal, says, hey, you're bronze 5, you better step it up, or, you know, oh, you made it into gold, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That's tying it together. It's telling you, you know, it's a push to get better.
Mm-hmm.
And it may not be as, you know, it may not be tactical, but it's certainly taking from that, giving you just one tiny bit, and then just making sure that you have to go for it.
Yeah. And it has become very much a key element for multiplayer titles. Besides League of Legends, of course, the game that I've been playing, Payday 2, is a good example of just giving you something to tie each game together. And I think this in itself has become a real make or break point for a lot of multiplayer based shooters, or just multiplayer games in design. Because when there is nothing to tie these games together, it just seems to fade away. Like, we've seen this with a lot of smaller based multiplayer titles that have been trying to go for, you know, the old school days of Quake and Doom, where it's just Deathmatch or King of the Hill, and they just only last like a few months because there's nothing to really keep the player invested in it.
Yeah, essentially you would either make it, essentially you'd be a friend with someone who's, you know, just as dedicated as you, and that's all you can do. There's no in-game push that's keeping everyone's eye on a common goal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, talking about tactical gameplay, we've talked about some elements where it works, obviously with games like XCOM or metagame progression, like League of Legends, Call of Duty, and those. I also want to touch on a game that I think that has been doing too well, and that is Evolve. This is a game, of course, I know you played it during the alpha, or I think the beta, and it was one that a lot of people were looking to be the next thing from Left 4 Dead. And Left 4 Dead is a game that I know both of us, we love that game. I've spent, God, I think I've spent over like 700-800 hours on it.
Actually, I think we're both around 1700. Nice. for the combined Left 4 Dead 1 and 2.
Oh, yeah,
it didn't start tracking numbers until about 5 months after Left 4 Dead 1's release. So.
Oh, God. And Left 4 Dead, it was a great game, but as you were saying, Alex, there was no metagame progression. There was no personalization to it. So the reason why it stuck was that we developed, a lot of our friends got to play, and that's what
kept us
around.
Yeah, we had that community.
Yeah, but there wasn't anything in there in-game to tie together. So that's why a lot of people were hoping Evolve, with its progression and balancing, was going to sort of be the game that Left 4 Dead couldn't have been. But from what I've been seeing, what I've heard you and some of my friends have said, it sort of fell on its face in terms of its metagame progression.
Yeah, so they ended up having a few balance issues on release, and they had all of the statistics. They gave out beautiful statistics on, you know, this is the win rate with these hunters, and these are the win rates of each monster, and this move is too powerful. We're going to fix that. Don't you worry. Mm-hmm. And even steering aside from any of the DLC issues, which I won't go over here, they ended up hitting release and then just balanced it based on the very highest competitive level. Mm-hmm. There was one group that were, you know, they essentially balanced everything around one setup. They said, this setup is overpowered, we'll take it down a notch. And balanced the monsters based around that one setup. Now, wait a minute. You've got, I believe it's 12 characters, and you're completely ignoring like 8 of them. Mm-hmm. You know, it's you're essentially forcing the game to be played in this one manner, mm-hmm. when the entire pull of the game is you don't have to be shoehorned into that role. You can pick, mm-hmm. you know, you can tweak your team around a little bit. Yeah. And they did that, and the community just crashed.
Yeah, and that's a good point about when tactical or metagame progression really doesn't work, is when it all gets boiled down to min-maxing values. There's only one real way to play. Now, with XCOM, while it had limited options in terms of the classes, there's enough variability in how you could design someone. I know for me, I put on the second wave option where the stats got randomized as well, so you were offering more options there. So it wasn't like there was only one way to play through XCOM. There are people who love snipers, you could do a lot with assaults and stuff like that. But what sounds like with Evolve, they were basically going strictly from the super top competitive aspect, which competitive gameplay is all about min-maxing. That's how people learn how to play these games. They play it to such a point where they get down to almost a science. But that's not the same as, you know, when someone like you and I play a game where we're playing it to enjoy it and playing it to get that personalized aspect. When you're basically saying, oh, here's 10 choices, but only 2 of them are going to work, you know, what are you supposed to do with that?
This is kind of an issue with the way that the multiplayer works, essentially. Because mm-hmm. you take Left 4 Dead, and the balance on Left 4 Dead wasn't that great. The boomer is very clearly the make or break.
Yeah.
With, you know, because it cuts a lot of sight, and then it brings in a big horde, and then having an off tank spawn of a few feet sometimes decides an entire match. Yeah. But the main thing was in something like Left 4 Dead, at the end of the day, it's a 4-on-4, and frankly, everybody's gonna die at some point. Someone's just gonna get completely creamed, and that's okay. It just happens.
Yeah.
However, you're playing something like Evolve, the entire crux of the game is the monster, who is one person, has to be competitive level against, or essentially, maybe not competitive level, but it has to be the exact same skill level of the other 4 people playing. Mm-hmm. So you've got the 4-on-1. If you have a weak member on either side, the game just kind of falls apart. You take what may have been a brilliant game, you know, oh, it's going to be so close or whatever, and you'll either get, oh, we never saw the monster the entire game because he was too good, or, you know, the monster just either gets caught in 5 minutes, or maybe one of your team members is too weak and you can't take advantage of that. You keep saying, you know, why is this function of our team missing? It's because of your weak link. Mm-hmm. And it's just pounded into it. It's almost like playing a MOBA where you're just looking at someone and you can pretty much just say, why are we losing the game? That's why. And it's something that XCOM can completely avoid just because it's a single player game.
Yeah.
So you don't, it's almost like a tabletop RPG where you want balance, but it's not that fine line. Mm-hmm. And I actually have an interesting statistic. Only, according to the Steam achievements, only 11% of people have ever won a multiplayer match in XCOM. Mm. Which, to be honest, is 11% of the people have attempted multiplayer.
Yeah.
Which is perfectly fine. It's a single-player focused game. Mm-hmm. And that also says to me that strategic layer, that campaign layer, mm-hmm. is a powerful force. Because no one's saying, boy, these battles in XCOM, while they're great, it's that context that the campaign map gives them that mm-hmm. really pushes it over the top.
Yeah. And I think single player versus multiplayer, that is a really big point, especially with games where you're giving the player the option to personalize their setup. Because when you're playing a single player game, you're given a lot more leeway or a lot more rope in terms of designing your abilities, because you don't need to worry about how this is going to be used against another player. It's why you have very cut and dry or black and white mechanics, you know, like stuff like taunting an enemy, being able to basically mess with the AI, because you're not going to have to assume, because you don't have to set up like a taunt ability and say, oh, now someone else is going to actually have to be forced to hit that. Unless it's built like hard-coded in, like you would see in Hearthstone. But when you look at a game like Evolve, and as you were saying, when they were trying to make that min-max and trying to balance it around super high competitive play, it doesn't create a balanced setup. It creates a very one-note setup that then every game basically just devolves, like no pun intended, into. Now, talking more about tactical gameplay and what we've been seeing, another genre where it has become very popular has been RPGs and being able to set up your own little team, customize every little aspect of them. Games like the Tactics Ogre series, Final Fantasy Tactics, have been huge in Japan. Have you ever played or heard of like the Disgaea games from NIS America?
I have not heard enough about Disgaea. I have played Tactics Ogre, and I've done a bit of Final Fantasy Tactics, as well as almost getting into The Last Remnant,
mm-hmm.
but I'm not a fan of the slower RPGs. Mm-hmm. I much prefer the almost westernized XCOM, you know, Mount and Blade, mm-hmm. where it's a very strict set of rules,
mm-hmm.
and the stats don't really change around that much. It's more of a, you know, if you're playing XCOM and there's a lizard man or thin man, his stats aren't going to change. He's not going to have a +5 hat of whatever. He's going to have these stats. He could probably be pretty good. And when the game gets harder, it's not him increasing his stats. There's merely two of them.
Yeah. Now, it's interesting you mentioned about increasing stats, Alex, because one of the things that we see with a lot of strategy and tactical-based games in terms of raising the difficulty up has really been more on the stat-tweaking side. When I play, like, action games, like, really good action games that do difficulty levels right are those that basically introduce new setups or new enemies into the mix. My go-to example is always going to be Ninja Gaiden Black, for how they basically just completely alter how the game is played with each difficulty level because they introduce new enemies. But with tactical and strategic Maya games, because you're dealing with these hard rules and setup, it feels like the developer's only option is to stat tweak. I know with XCOM Enemy Unknown, the Thin Men example, when you're playing on, I think it's like the second hardest level, like they have like a 70% accuracy and like a 50% chance to crit on every hit. And yeah. It just really limits your options, but again, it really changes how these guys are used because their stats are pretty much spiked in certain aspects of their design and mechanics.
Now, the nice thing I like about how XCOM did that, as compared to some other games such as Total War, is with that spike, it's a set spike, and it essentially says you must play the game at a heightened level. You have to play it on one of the most careful levels. For example, you're not gonna cross cover very much. You're gonna keep hunkered down.
Oh yeah.
And while it does say it is almost like Evolve in that it's pushing one correct play style, that's also a choice. You know, you picked, you know, Iron Man Classic or whatever. You picked that high difficulty, and that's fine. It's not giving them twice as much health. It's merely saying whatever his stats are augmented to take advantage of failure. You still have to play the game correctly.
And when I played, like, recently, or not so recently by when this podcast goes up, but when we're recording, I've been playing Chroma Squad, which is a very lighthearted, tactical, I guess almost like strategy RPG-type game. And what they did on the different difficulty levels is simply just go for just pure stat adjustments. Enemies at the lower level, they may hit you for 50 points of damage. When you're playing on the hardest level, they hit you for, like, 100 points of damage. And I'm not quite sure how I like about that, and I actually got the perfect example of sort of why this thing annoyed me. Alex, have you played, like, the Fire Emblem series at all?
No. Missed the DS.
Oh. Fire Emblem definitely is a tactical... actually, I'm not quite sure if I would call it tactical strategy. It's more strategy, I guess, oriented. Basically, every unit has one life. They're like actual living, breathing characters in this world. So when they die, they are gone for good. All their friends will mourn them, stuff like that. And what they did in the game is they've set the eye to specifically exploit any mistakes you make, or specifically exploit weakened characters. Because again, everyone only has one life. So let's say you send one character out and he takes 10 points of damage and he's at half health. When the AI plays his turn, the AI knows completely to target that guy down, because he won't survive being hit by three more guys. And what they did with the higher difficulty is they made it so extreme in terms of the damage output that it became where if you don't finish the guy on your turn, you'll probably be left with such little health that that guy will be killed when it's the enemy's turn. And it really made things, I guess the best expression I like to use, it removed the safety net where you could make a mistake or you could leave this guy in a weakened position. But when you're playing on hard or whatever the expert level difficulty was, it basically said, you know what, you need to play this game, you know, at the absolute best of your ability or you will not win. And I just want to ask you, Alex, what do you think about those types of games? Like, do those types of games appeal to you where they're pretty much demanding mastery or expertise to have any chance of winning?
A lot of those higher difficulty ones, those are not appealing to me. Especially, I had a very bad experience with Company of Heroes, where as soon as I ended up just loving comp stomps. I did a bunch of comp stomps on highest difficulty, whatever. And on the original Company of Heroes, the difficulty essentially increased the amount of money the enemy got. So what would happen is you'd have two, and this is a game set in World War II, RTS, or tactical actually. So what would happen is essentially you'd have maybe two units of riflemen, they'd come up with three or four, which I felt was very fair. As I'm playing on a higher difficulty, you can have more units to send at me. What I did not think was very fair was if you played, once the expansion pack Opposing Fronts came out, the difficulty was tied directly to the unit's stats. So for instance, if you were to play on the highest difficulty expert, your unit of engineers versus their unit of engineers, theirs would be 50% better.
Oh, okay.
So you physically could not defeat them using whatever, you know, you could use a lot of tactics, but it's going to take you a better unit. And it got even worse when you'd have a unit of riflemen versus a unit of their engineers. It'd usually be a tie or even a loss for you. And so what it did was instead of having proper tactics come in, instead of me having to really, really get all of my points covered, I would just bring a bunch of snipers. Because the way that the sniper rifle scaled was, it still killed you in one shot. I don't care. It kills you in one shot. Like, doesn't matter what your health is, kills you in one shot. So what used to be a reasonably balanced game where the AI would just have more units at me turned into me completely changing the way I play. There were certain units you couldn't use and certain units that you had to use.
Yeah, I'm glad that you brought that up, Alex, because that is a great example of when metagame and title gameplay doesn't work, is when there is a legitimately altered way of playing the game based on the difficulty, where... Again, this goes back to what we were saying a few minutes ago with Evolve, where if you're playing the game and you give the player 10 choices, and then when you say, oh, on hard mode, 8 of those choices just simply don't work. You need to play using this exact strategy and this exact unit, or you'll have no chance, because that's how we tweak these guys. Then it just doesn't really become interesting. It just becomes more of a slogfest, or just a grind of, you know, feeding units into the machine, hopefully you get that little edge going forward.
And I can give a lot of leeway to something like Fire Emblem, where you said, you know, it's a fine line, simply because that's also not the difficulty that you're meant to play on.
Mm-hmm.
Something like Evolve, that is the difficulty. You're not given that choice.
Yeah, there's no like light, medium, or expert mode of playing that game. It's basically one set mode that everyone has to adjust to.
Your only hope is your opponent is no good.
And if they are good, you know, good luck. You know, there's not much you can do there. Now, all this talk about XCOM really has got me in the mood to play, actually. It's Enemy Unknown, to me, is one of those games that it's so close to being one of my perfect games. One of those games I just truly love. And again, from what you were saying, Alex, it just has to be like this great combination of campaign and tactical gameplay. And when you're watching, I watch, like, footage of someone playing the game on, like, classic Iron Man, you know, all the second wave options on. And, I mean, it really is night and day in how you approach it, but it's really more about your mastery of the mechanics and systems. A great example would be hunkering down, which, for those of you who didn't play the game, when you hunker down, I'm trying to remember exactly, you can probably correct me on this. When you hunker down, it raises your evasion stat by, I think, like, what, 50% or something?
I thought it increased armor by, I believe it was 4. I wanted to say it increased cover by 4,
mm-hmm.
but and forced full cover, and then you couldn't see very far. Yeah. But I'm not... Again, I didn't actually play on the higher difficulties. Yeah. I don't think I ever used it.
Yeah. And that's a good point. When you're playing on, like, normal and easy of XCOM, you can really play fast and loose with the rule set because it allows you to do that. It's not going to punish you. But when you're playing on classic and, you know, super hard difficulty, you need to use that mechanic and really does become life or death. I think, and please for those of you listening, this is not 100% sure, I think when you hunker down, it also removes the enemy's ability to critically hit you, but that I'm not completely sure of.
That would explain its use for a lot of those higher-end plays, because I will say everything I've watched on those higher difficulties mm-hmm. involves a lot of very precise grenades due to its absolute damage, where you will deal this much damage. Like there's no question about it. You're going to deal the damage. Mm-hmm. As opposed to having afraid squad mates with, you know, low-level squad mates, maybe 50, 60% hit chance. It's not enough to really take people down in one or two waves.
Yeah. Now, we've been talking about strategy games and tactical gameplay. I also want to talk about another big move that we've seen in terms of adding that personalization aspect, and that would be in games like the Demon's Souls and Dark Souls series. Those
Fashion
games...
Souls.
What?
Fashion Souls, I know it well.
Yeah. And those games have really become popular. They are definitely more on the roguelike side of things, but they also give the player a wide berth in terms of defining their character. Usually, at least from playing Demon's Souls and then Dark 1 and 2, either in terms of range, melee, magic, and then a combination thereof of those three. For those types of games, what do you think about the level of customization, or I'm sorry, personalization they give the player in terms of how to play the game?
As far as I'm going to focus on Dark Souls 1, as that was my favorite.
Mm-hmm.
As far as that goes, the armor, I would like to see it more of a Bloodborne type, where the armor can be interchanged more instead of normally I would just use the lightest chest piece I could mm-hmm. while still being in a 25% roll pre-patch
mm-hmm.
and then just heavy arms. But one thing that I would like to bring up is the weapons in Dark Souls and the fact that something like a mace and a longsword, while statistically being very similar,
mm-hmm.
have almost completely different use cases.
Yeah.
And not in terms of armor piercing and whatnot, but in terms of the environment.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're in, let's just say, the catacombs below, and you're trying to get to Lord Nito, a lot of the land there is very jagged. It goes up, it goes down a bit. Something like a longsword actually ends up getting stuck either in the walls or a bit in the floor due to its moveset.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas something like either a mace, or I actually prefer the halberd for the poking power, would actually be better, not because of its damage, but just because the environment that you're in. And the same thing applies to, let's just say, you're in a bunch of corridors trying to get up the Iron Fortress, or Sen's Fortress, sorry.
Mm-hmm.
Where that was where I thought the personalization of Dark Souls was the best, where you pick your armor and you pick your weapon, and let's just say I'm helping someone out or I get invaded, I see their weapon. And a lot of times, it wouldn't be a twink, it would just be, you know, someone who's trying out either a new weapon or their personal favorite weapon,
mm-hmm.
be it a katana, Murakamo, you know, the claymore. Just because of that, you don't see people using the most efficient weapon. You see a lot of weapons going around.
Mm-hmm. And the whole Soul series is really great on giving you different weapons, and you can't really just rely purely on stats because of that. As you said, there's a difference between swinging your longsword around versus swinging a mace or a two-hand club. I know when I was playing, I think it was the first Dark Souls, I just went with like a depraved build. I just walked around with my club just like bashing everything in. And then when you switch to like the katana or the falcon, it's just a completely different feel to it.
Oh yeah, you'd have that range. You'd have that. You'd have to watch out for the weapon degrading.
Mm-hmm.
Good stuff.
Yeah. Now, we've been talking a lot about strategy games and a lot of the minute details of the design. I think start to get to the end of this topic because I mean we can talk a lot about this, but I do want to come back to what we were talking about at the beginning in terms of the difference between tactical and strategic gameplay, and this is something that we see really in how games use this type of design. I know you were talking about sort of the differences between like a game like Call of Duty that uses a meta game and tactical side versus like a game that's more about abstraction or like a strategy game that has like tactical elements to it. So if you could just elaborate a little bit more on that, Alex, regarding
sure.
those two unique or those two styles of tactical and strategic play.
So I'd like to bring up Mountain Blade.
Mm-hmm.
So Mountain Blade, the crux of it is, again, the battles. However, the battles aren't really tactical.
Mm-hmm.
They're more strategic because while you do have that setup phase in the main map where you pick and choose all of your, you know, you'll pick your army out.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is when you get into the battle, you're not controlling it. You're not controlling your men to that tactical level.
Mm-hmm.
That's just because Mountain Blade was not made for that. The controls on that are pretty much atrocious. Where the most you can really do, and the most I've ever really seen done, is you have your cavalry follow you to whatever place they need to be. Then you tell them to hold. And you have your archers follow you to a certain spot, and you tell them to hold. And then you have your melee units go to wherever you tell them to hold. And this entire time, this isn't a setup period. This is the enemy charging at you. And you're fiddling around with all of your units. You really can't afford to do this. So what most of the time happens is infantry, hold, archers, fire at will, cavalry, follow me. And then the battle just goes. And there's not really a lot of tactics there. You're not going to strategically pick out something, or you're not going to really have battle lines. You're just kind of having your blob of troops rush at their mm-hmm. blob of troops. And that's, again, that's not what Mountain Blade's about.
Mm-hmm.
If you play something like multiplayer, I'd like to say Warband, the Palm server, battle mode, you could get something like that, where you could have a little bit of those tactics,
mm-hmm.
where you maybe have five or six people, we did, where you have spears and shields. But the amount of coordination you'd need would never happen in the main game.
Mm-hmm.
So you'd never get into that tactical situation. Your strategy would come to the field, you'd throw it at the enemy, they'd throw theirs at you, and then you'd see who wins.
Yeah, and when you talk more about, like, the tactical side, like, when you see in a game like Call of Duty or action-based games that have, like, tactical or metagame progression, what type of examples do you think of on that front?
In terms of tactics, not too much.
Mm-hmm.
Call of Duty has it's almost too short range, where you have a lot of the concepts in the modern weapons, where you have the machine gun, you have the submachine gun, you have the rifle.
Mm-hmm.
Except at the end of the day, everyone's engaging within 100 feet. And granted, I do see snipers and I do see stuff like that, but by and large, it is more who can get a beat on who faster.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's the style of game it is. You get your one life, and maybe, you'll have a specific build. Maybe you'll have a shield. Maybe you'll have the dual shotguns. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, there's not really a metagame there so much as a level up perk system.
Yeah.
Where you can change how you play, but not in any sort of tactical or even strategic way. You're merely just unlocking some RPG elements that increase how you play the game. And the same with Battlefield, where, they're taking RPG elements, but they're not taking tactical elements.
Yeah. And I think that is a good point. Like, it gives you that sense of personalization, but you can't really, it's not really going to change how you play, in the sense that having like a 3% faster reload time at like the super high competitive level is going to mean something, but it's not changing how the game is going to play. Your example from earlier with XCOM would be a good example of the opposite of that, where there is a fundamental difference in your strategy if you went with a team including like two snipers to assault versus three heavy and a support. That's going to completely change how the game's going to play for that specific match.
Yeah, it's Call of Duty and Battlefield aren't all of the guns are essentially balanced against each other. They're trying to make it about as fair as they can throughout ranges, where yes, your machine gun's not so hot close range compared to a submachine gun. But at the end of the day, it's completely different from, oh no, my sniper is right next to something in XCOM and it's going to be bad.
Now, I wanted to get your thoughts, Alex. Well, we've been talking about a lot of these strategy games and getting that type of metagame or tactical design to it. And I also wanted to just ask you, this sort of brings me back to when I brought up Disgaea earlier in the cast. One thing about Disgaea is how it just goes overboard in terms of tactics and customization. And I'll give you like a quick breakdown, at least of playing up to Disgaea 4. So you can, yeah, they're up to, I think, 5. I think there's maybe a 6 in development right now. So what they did is you create a character, you can choose what their species is, which gives a bonus. You then level them up, you give them different weapons, which then lets them specialize or get skills. Like, the more they use a sword, they'll get sword skills and stuff like that. You can combine characters to create, like, a new unit who shares skills. You can go into items and then level them up. And it's a game where, like, the basic story can take maybe, like, it's like a 30-40 hour JRPG-style thing. But there's enough mechanics and systems where you could easily spend, like, hundreds of hours. And I'm not kidding. That's not hyperbole of just trying to build these characters up. Like, you can actually go up to, like, level 9,999, do, like, 10 million points of damage. Like, there's so many tackle and, like, customization elements to it that it almost feels like the game gets bogged down. So I'm just wondering, from your perspective, when games go so far into the customization, I'm talking like, rivet counting almost, like that level of detail when it comes to this type of mechanics, is that something that you enjoy, or is that like too much of a good thing?
That all depends on one thing.
Mm-hmm.
Is that, and I assume in Disgaea it's all single player.
Yes.
Type. Is the game balanced around me taking advantage of them?
That's the funny thing. It's yes and no. Like, when they talk about, like, as I said, like, the 30-hour story campaign type deal, then they don't really expect you to go into that detail unless you need, like, a little help. Let's say you're stuck at a tough boss fight and you need an edge. Like, if you do these types of things during the story campaign, it breaks the campaign. Like, I played the first Skaia where I didn't do, like, you know, like, the item enhancements. I didn't ascend my characters, combine stuff like that. And then I replay that with those systems, and there's no single-player balance. I mean, it literally got to a point where one character could take on an entire map, because even though they were level 50, they were, like, level 500 in terms of stats and items and all the crazy things I did to tweak that guy. And they expect that, because when you get to, like, the new game plus or the bonus challenges, they basically say, okay, now you're fighting level, like, 2,000 enemies now. You know, have fun. Now you really need to use these mechanics.
As long as they provide the outlet for it, and granted, that doesn't sound like it's for me just because I'd have to play through the entire game then get to New Game Plus. It's never worked out for me. But that does seem pretty good, because my only other experience with something like that would be actually in the Total War series, where it's notorious for the campaign AI kind of tripping and ruining your experience.
Yeah.
You'd have something like... take something like Rome 2, where there's a, you can take advantage of general perks, you can take advantage of building perks, of almost government perks, tech perks, you can take advantage of all of these things, and then you can steamroll the AI, and it's no fun for anyone. Like, so the AI isn't built into the game to actually use and enjoy those systems.
Yeah.
So in something like this guy, if they're giving you that opportunity to throw yourself against it using those systems where you need to use them, that does sound interesting. But I am very worried, simply because you need the AI that can back it up.
Yeah. And, like, with the sky, like, there really is no, like, real AI to it. Like, the game really doesn't play against you. It's really more, like... It almost gets to the point where it feels like a job, where you're just...
Almost like a tower defense?
Not really. It's basically, once you get your guy so level up, there is no strategy. It's literally, I send my guy forward, he hits you for 10 million damage, you're dead. There's no, like, greater tactics of any way to mitigate that. Like, once you start building your units at that obscene power level, it's really just, I send my three guys out, game over, you know, let's move on to the next level. As you were saying with, like, the Total War... The AI, the game is not really meant to challenge you or be accustomed to that level of, I'm sorry, to that tactical level. Whereas with a game like XCOM, the enemies grow and they unlock new abilities to sort of counter how your characters grow and improve on your end.
One of the things about XCOM is it's not, you know, one of the things you were also talking about earlier on where, oh, you know that there's this coming at the end of the month, this raid coming. XCOM is very tight in that sense, where the designers always know, they can always know what you're doing because they're not giving you that many options, which in a game like XCOM is perfectly fine because the AI doesn't need to be that great. Like, the AI, as far as I can tell, it kind of moves around and it tries not to do stupid things. You know, it'll get close if it needs to, it'll try and stay away if it needs to, try and snipe you down. It's not trying to waste your time. That's fine. You know, it doesn't need to take advantage of excellent AI.
Now, I think let's move on and I think get to probably one of our final topics for this discussion. And that is talking, you brought up a few seconds ago the Total War series. I just want to touch more on the strategy games that have tactical sides to them. So not just Total War, there's stuff like the Age of Wonder series. I know they recently did the game Endless Legend that came out, where you had this strategy map, you build your cities, you build troops just like you would in a game like Civilization, but then when armies meet, it then zooms down into this battle, where you're able to control your units. Yep.
I would almost consider Civ 5 to be a part of that, simply because of the one square per unit tactics. Where you can't just take a city by, like, mobbing it with swordsmen. Like, you can, on a strategic sense, if you're so much more advanced than them or your economy is so good that you can afford to just ineffectually throw units at them until they go down. But it does have that system in place where you will need to you know, have a mixture. You need to have either some cavalry or maybe you're going to spam samurai with some archers and then maybe some catapults.
Mm-hmm.
Where it actually, I do think it is in that system. It does have that tactical level. And granted, it's not on the same scale as say, XCOM, but it's a welcome addition from Stack of Doom versus Stack of Doom.
Yeah.
And it's definitely, Civilization is definitely a strategically focused game instead of a tactically focused game. Mm-hmm. The same with, say, the Europa Universalis series, where, yeah, it technically has battles, but it's not battles in the sense of total war battles.
Yeah.
But that's fine, because it's focused on that strategy layer, not the tactical layer.
Mm-hmm. Now, I know you're a fan of the Total War series. I know you've played a lot of the recent entries, and I know that some of them you like more than others. Now, from like a casual perspective, the gameplay or the general play has remained mostly the same between the strategic layer of managing your empire, building your cities or your various territories, and then going into the real-time ground-level unit management. But I know that the various games have been very polarizing. There have been some, like,
pretty much all of them have been polarizing in some manner or other.
Mm-hmm. And, like, something like, I think the last Rome 2 Total War, I heard that got just, like, slammed with reviews from the start. While, like, Shogun 2 Total War, I heard, like, almost nothing but praise out of, like, the original release of that. So, from your experience playing the series, Alex, what has made like the games, or what has made the series so polarizing among fans?
Well, Rome 2 is a very long subject.
Mm-hmm.
I believe it has the worst DLC of all time. You're not. They have the launch day DLC was you were not allowed to play as the Greeks.
Oh.
This would be the equivalent of like I'm going to release a basketball game. You can't play as like the Bulls.
Mm-hmm.
Or honestly, you know, Houston, you can't play as anyone pretty much. I mean, when you think of that time period, when you think of the Roman era, mm-hmm. everyone knows Rome and everyone knows Greece. Can you name anyone else?
Yeah.
I mean, you can name like the barbarian factions that sacked Rome, I'm sure, but that's about it. They were really taking a core nation that everyone was thinking of. And I don't know. I don't even know what the defense was. But frankly, you're not making Rome Total War. And oh, we forgot to put Greece in. Oh, I'm so sorry. We were making Call of Duty. We kind of forgot to put pistols in. Sorry, guys. It's just ridiculous. And the game was almost unplayable for months. But mm-hmm. I will say, if I were a new player at this point, it really is a good choice. I mean, I enjoy it. They're on patch 16. They did almost a complete re-release.
Mm-hmm.
I was stunned when they completely revamped their building system to make it more like Shogun 2, which at the end of the day, Shogun 2 is the better option.
Mm-hmm.
But Shogun 2 is also a very concise, light on the options.
Mm-hmm.
So comparing Rome 2 and Shogun 2, Rome 2 has boatloads of different units that are very slightly different. Like you have Eastern Spearmen, then you have Eastern Spearmen with like purple hats, and their stats are slightly different. And like technically it's a new unit, but at the end of the day, you've got Light Spearmen, and it's a Light Spearmen and Light Spearmen number 2. So that if you don't care about that in the tactical sense, that doesn't, you know, it doesn't matter, and that's why you choose something like Shogun 2. Shogun 2 is a very tight game with much fewer choices than Rome 2, but because of that, your choices matter so much more.
Mm-hmm.
The first 20 or 30 opening turns in Shogun, you will pick your best ally. You will maybe earn one or two extra provinces, and you're going to have very tight fights simply because you don't have a large empire to deal with. You're a very small unit, and you're fighting other small units to start with. Mm-hmm. Whereas something like Rome, within 5 or 10 turns, you can already start stacking all of these bonuses with buildings and techs that the AI simply doesn't understand.
Yeah.
The AI doesn't understand the difference between spearmen and spearmen with purple hat. And, on you know, it makes a 1 or 2% difference.
Mm-hmm.
But when you start stacking those up, you're starting to see almost like Disgaea, where by all appearances, you're almost as strong. But with all those bonuses you've stacked up, mm-hmm. you're exponentially stronger.
Yeah. So it sounds like with Rome, the problem, similar to like with Disgaea, and what we've been talking about as a red flag of tactical or meta gameplay, is when it's not balanced to the point that both sides or everyone can make use of it. Like, if you give the player, as you said, all these little perks and bonuses, and it just completely makes them overpowered, and the AI doesn't have anything to compensate, or it's compensating in such a degree, like with the Company of Heroes examples, where it's not really playing the game better, you're just tweaking the stats to compensate, it just messes up the entire balance.
They actually linked it. So in both Rome 2 and Shogun 2, the AI will get a statistical bonus to its morale and attack modifiers that on higher difficulties is incredibly annoying. You'll see a force of, if you were to field a normal 2,000 versus 2,000 unit army, your army would probably rout at maybe a third. So at like 800 or so, 807 or so, 100 or so units. You'd start having big morale failures. The AI, however, would fight down almost to the last 100. They'd get all of that extra time because of that extra morale bonus, not to mention the statistical bonus, which in some ways is still exciting because you end up having to play the game a different way, a more correct way. But also, you end up with a lot of really bad fights. One of the things is, When you have these two different types of games, when you have that strategic layer, that tactical layer, something like XCOM, the developers had a boatload of control over that. They know exactly what you're doing when, and they can say, you're not going to have lasers for, two more months, so we don't have to make you fight things with lasers. Or even, I don't know, if they track when you have lasers. I don't know. Something like Total War, the strategic map is open-ended. It says, here, conquer some provinces. The AI starts off reasonably similar to what you do, and we hope that it'll reach the same level. You can have a terrible game if the AI doesn't give you these fights. It would be the equivalent of XCOM, where the aliens would show up and say, I'm too weak. I don't want to fight. I'm going away. You wouldn't actually have a fight. You'd have something in Rome where it would be either, I ended up sacking Rome once, and they had no one defending it. And it's like, well, that's no fun. I want a big, big, fancy battle on Rome. I want this big, deep tactical battle where you use these complex tactical systems that are in the battles. Except for when the campaign AI messes up, you don't get those battles. You get 4,000 units versus 50. And it's, you're not going to fight that. You know the answer.
Yeah. I have, since we're talking about strategy games, I have two, I guess, somewhat tangent questions I want to ask you about, Alex, in terms of strategy game design. The first one, as you just said a few minutes ago regarding Rome, Total War II, how they patched the hell out of it, I just want to get your thoughts on this. As a consumer, someone who plays a lot of video games, what are your thoughts on games that have so many patches added to it, and whether or not people should give these games a second try or revise their scores? Like, another example that I was thinking of would be like Supreme Commander 2. And the difference between that at launch and that like a year and a half was night and day. It went from being one of the worst strategy games to one of the most popular ones, at least among my friends and the group that I played with.
Huh. I wasn't a fan of that one, to be honest. I mean, Supreme Commander 1 and Total Annihilation, they had they had their niche. They had their very slow, slogging, tech-related, big-scale game. And, Supreme Commander 2 was cool, and it had a lot of the elements, but it was definitely made, it was made to be like a 20-minute game, 10-minute game. Which, for someone like me, I play against the AI 95% of the time in those games. I don't have the skills to hold 200 APM for 20 minutes or however long. StarCraft, oof.
Oh God, no!
So something like that was a big disappointment to me, where they took out most of its interesting elements. And granted, you that wasn't your point. The point was, should they give it a second chance? It's a fine line. It's a lot like early access, when it's not so much giving it that second chance, because I do agree they need, having a second chance is definitely part of it. They should. But the problem is, when do they get that chance and how many do they get? So you take something like you take something like Rome. They had 16 patches, and frankly, it was – you'd be considered playable at like 4 or 7. And if you were to look back on patch 4.7 and, you know, that was its second chance, you'd be like, oh, this is kind of crummy. You know, the AI doesn't know how to play. The building system makes no sense at that point. And the game balance says slingers are like the world's greatest unit of all time. So you're going to walk out of it, you know, really depressed. And you said, yeah, I gave it a second chance. It was still no good. Whereas if you look at it today, you can argue that it's not a great Total War, but you can't say it's bad anymore. You can't say it was the wreck, the steaming pile that it was on launch, on patch 4, on patch 7. Mm-hmm. I still consider it, a good entry would be either Rome 2 or Shogun 2, take your pick.
Okay.
But I would say that the biggest problem is the same thing as early access, which is when do you give it that second chance?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And early access, that's another interesting topic. I mean, we could probably spend like 30 minutes on that one easily.
Oh, yeah.
And it is definitely becoming very tough to decide, like, when do you relook at a game, or do you even look at a game a second time? And that discussion, that's probably one we probably can't get into tonight because it's such a long thing, but it is a very important deal when I've spoken to a lot of indie developers about getting your best foot forward. And you really, especially in today's market, you don't have the opportunity or the luxury to say, oh, we're going to release the game now, but it will be, you know, this much better in 5 patches from now, but we're going to just release it now. You just wait for it type deal. You do that, and by the time that patch comes around, there's already going to be like dozens or if not hundreds of other games to take the time away from the consumer.
Oh, absolutely. Something like Darkest Dungeon, I ended up missing it because, you know, it reached the zenith of its popularity in early access. And I'm like, wow, this thing looks great. You know, I don't want to touch it yet. Mm-hmm. And then what happens? We have Chroma Squad. We have Desktop Dungeons. Mm-hmm. We have Invisible Ink just kind of blown out of nowhere. And it's like, well, you know, Darkest Dungeon is still a great game, but I kind of missed the boat.
Yeah. And it's such a very tricky thing, knowing when to release your game and knowing how much to get it done. I've spoken to developers like Chris Park and John Schaefer, and they talked about how it's really important to make sure your foundation is set before you release the game. Make sure that your core experience is done, and then everything else can come later or can come through time. But if you release a game that doesn't work right on day one, you're not going to have a second or, hell no, not even like a third chance to get it right.
Well, do you think it's going through the same phase now, early access on Steam, the same phase as the Kickstarters, where it started off with just people were honestly just throwing money at it and like just incredibly excited, and then it kind of dies down as people say, you know, they step back and they say, you know, maybe someone didn't deserve all this money from their like 5-minute pitch video on that was shot on like a home video camera and they didn't really have anything there. Is that happening?
From what I've been seeing, what I've been looking at developers who've been putting it on there, it's definitely a different climate than it was a year or 2 years ago. And part of it, just like with Kickstarter, has really been because of really the consumer confidence dropping due to a lot of people releasing like haphazard projects or not committing. And as you were just saying, the days where someone could just release like a 2-minute video saying, I want to make a game, give me $500,000, that's not going to happen anymore. You really need to go all in with a Kickstarter campaign. Now, with early access, it's kind of really hard to tell because a lot of them, or at least the ones that have been doing okay, have at least something to show for it, you know, when it goes into it. Invisible Ink at least had a pretty stable alpha. Darkest Dungeon gave you, I think, like 34% of the game, or 34% of the content, but not overall in terms of mechanics. But the big problem with early access, I think, at least right now, is keeping that momentum going. We saw this with, like, Starbound, and how it was really big, and then developers went quiet, and then it just got like hit with a backlash of consumers, and then they've been trying to work their way back up to it. But it's really hard to really keep that momentum going. Like, even like Prison Architect, they've been doing it for like 2.5 years now, or at least 2.5 by the time this podcast is being recorded, and they've been doing their best to keep it in the public eye. But it's just really hard, like once you lose the faith in the consumers, it's almost impossible to get it back.
Oh yeah, and all that stuff, especially when, you know, the next big thing's coming out, mm-hmm. and you've got to compete with that. And you say, well, you know, we're still kind of in development, and you've already, you know, they've already had a taste of the game. Mm-hmm. They're going to want that new stuff.
Yeah. And the other, I guess, somewhat tangent question I want to ask you about, Alex, I know a few months ago we both played Rise of Nations, the Extended Edition, and one part of that game that I thought was really amazing for the time was that it did, I'm not sure if I would call this a tactical layer, but it did have, like, the turn-based, like, Conquer the World campaign, where you could pick and choose who you would attack and get, like, little bonuses for your next battle. I was just wondering, what did you think of that type of mode and how they built that up?
That is what I want in, honestly, every strategy game. You know I play co-op. I play a lot of co-op. Mm-hmm. They had something, they took, it was Ugin Systems took War Game, I believe it was Air Land Battle, the second one. Mm-hmm. They put that in the game. And that, you know, it took what was a series of either, you know, it was a campaign, which was okay. It took that and it said, here, have a, you know, have this tactical map. Or sorry, have this strategic map and tie it to these battles. And they made it co-op. And I was floored. That is, I played maybe 5 hours of the first one. Mm-hmm. And I think I have about 50 to 70 hours of that second one just because I'm such a big fan of that mode. Mm-hmm. And what it gives me in terms of I can tell a story or I can have a bunch of battles that matter. Mm-hmm. What, you know, you'll have someone that's maybe like your heavy tank division and you'll start, you know, sloughing off tanks. That's something that instead of in a regular battle where you're just like, oh, I lost, you know, 40% of my tanks. That's fine. That's acceptable. It turns that into, oh no, I lost 40% of my tanks. What does this mean 2 turns down the line? Mm-hmm. And it's this thing that's why I played the Total War series. That's why I played that. And I was crushed when they announced that co-op was removed from Wargame Red Dragon. Mm. And what is technically the best one in the series has I've barely played it because without that cooperative campaign mode, it to me it's a shadow of its former self.
Mm. Now, did you find the Wargame series to be a little too bloated in terms of tactical gameplay? Because I found it just very hard to get into just due to the level of detail and just everything they were asking you to understand from the start.
Part of that problem is alleviated by that campaign system. Mm-hmm. So they have, I believe it last time I checked, it was 1,000 units. And each of them have, you know, slight differences and whatnot. And, you know, in reality, it's probably more like a couple hundred units with a little bit of tweaking. Mm-hmm. But if you were in the campaign, you'd start to learn the differences very quickly if you're using the same unit battle after battle. Mm-hmm. And granted, you can do the same thing in either a skirmish mode or a PvP 1v1 situation. But the amount of time you have to learn that in a campaign setting compared to learning it on the field of battle in PvP, it's almost like Hearthstone in that when you're forced to do a multiplayer situation, you're both pressed for that time and you need to either look up a good guide or like look up the best units and say, okay, I'm going to start with these, bam. Mm-hmm. And you're going to miss out on a lot of things and it's going to force a meta. Whereas if you were taking something like the Wargame series, maybe you didn't pick the best unit or maybe this army doesn't even have a very good unit, but you learn about it. You're learning the strengths of it, the weaknesses of it. You're getting to see the full game. They built the game with all of these things in it. And if you take it out by just having to play a forced meta of the best, the best, the best, the game isn't as much as it could be. Mm-hmm. In something like Total War, it's the equivalent of Total War Attila, I can't play my favorite factions in multiplayer 1v1s because they're no good. I will lose every battle. There's the Seleucids, which have a very interesting slinger group and a very interesting spear group. But because they're not good in the meta, mm-hmm. if I want to use them in a multiplayer battle, I will lose in a 1v1. Mm-hmm. So I have to, you know, attempt to try 2v2s and 3v3s, which don't really show up a lot because nobody plays Total War multiplayer.
Yeah, and the use of a meta game, especially when we get into multiplayer, I think that's a really big topic when you look at things from a tactical or metagame layer versus single versus multiplayer competitive. As we talked about earlier with Evolve, they just completely mess with the balance due to their obsession or their just chasing that meta and trying to get to the perfect high-level, super-competitive crowd. And that's sort of where we run into one of the issues of, like, tactical or metagame design. When it gets to that point where you have these options in a game, but because the player base has swung one way or the other, it basically renders them moot. Hearthstone, I think, is a good example. I mean, that game has so many different, like, meta decks and strategies to it that some days or some months, some cards are just useless by virtue of the fact that everyone is now running their deck so-and-so, or they are using this card, and etc.
Oh, yeah. One of the reasons I quit Hearthstone was I ended up facing, it was back when Mage was top class. Mm-hmm. This was like, I believe it was near launch. And I was like, I'm going to play some Hearthstone, you know? And I love Arena, because Arena's like that magical, no meta, do mm-hmm. what you can.
Yeah.
But I ended up getting stuck in ranked on, I think it was like rank 19. And it was, you know, it's like, oh, I'm really not very good at this game. Mm-hmm. So all I did was just look up whatever the best deck was at the time, and I just kind of plowed my way through to rank 9. And I looked at it, and I said, I haven't learned anything.
Yeah.
I've just used the deck I Googled. And it was just such a crushing blow to me as a player of how important that deck is. And I know that, yeah, my own deck-building skills may not be the best, mm-hmm. but the fact that I was completely stymied on that one rank, and I could just so easily zip up the ranks through that, learning nothing as a player,
yeah,
just got me to quit. And to this day, I do not understand Hearthstone. Like, I can respect it. It is my favorite card game, but not a fan.
Yeah, and I haven't played either. I mean, I love watching people like play it and talk about it, but same thing for me. I just didn't feel the desire to play it because, as you said, Alex, it just became so adhere to this meta that, I mean, I understand the game enough that I know the rules, I know what cards, you know, how the game works, what cards to use, that type of thing. But when you're playing the game and you're tied to the meta, it's not really about your skill, it's about what kind of deck is the most popular. Like, if you know everyone is building a deck in this way, then you know what the obvious counter would be. And as you said, you could spend, you know, 3-4 months on your own trying to figure it out. Or you spend 2 minutes on Google, you Google what's the most popular anti-deck for this meta at the time, and then bing, bang, boom, you're done. You can get to, like, rank 9 or even higher, and there's no real growth on your end. It's not like you're becoming better as a player. You're just you're just getting through that meta layer.
Yeah, and I do accept that in Hearthstone, a lot of it is the randomness.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's... That in Hearthstone, and then getting it again in Attila, with just the fact that you have these games where, you know, there's this very deep field, you know, you can go through and you can use all these different units excitingly, but in a multiplayer sense, they're not all perfectly balanced, and you're going to take whatever wins mm-hmm. in a multiplayer setting. Whereas something like XCOM, for all I know, 5 snipers was the best build. That's great. That's not stopping my, you know, my preferred play style of, you know, 2 snipers or no snipers or whatever. Mm-hmm. In something like that single player, it doesn't affect me at all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, bringing this back to Total War, I think we'll begin to start to wrap things up. So I know we are getting a little late in terms of the recording. With the Total War series, as you said, I think that's sort of a good way to frame or tie things up about our discussion of what's good meta or tactical gameplay and what's bad. That when you give the player these options, there needs to be a compensation on the AI. There has to be a reason to use these mechanics. If you just throw all these details in and then say, you know, go nuts, you know, nothing's going to really stand in your way, then you're not really making deep choices. This could even be said of Hearthstone in a sense where your play style is not, or I'm sorry, your deck is not dictated by your strategy, it's dictated by what everyone else is doing. So again, there's no real learning or growth. Like with the Disgaea game, there's all these different rules and mechanics and systems, but I don't really need to like learn them at all. I just have to know, okay, I just use this for like 10 hours, get them up to this level, and then the game's done. There's no greater sense of use or mastery because everything is just firmly rooted in things outside of my control or outside of what the AI can handle.
Yeah, especially in something like Total War, where it's a lot of the flaws come down to the AI. People point at the AI, you know, it looks brain dead. And to be honest, that's a really hard problem for AI to solve. Something like Rome 2, where they have a very strong skirmishing meta, where, you know, it's almost like in I can bring in Dota. So did you ever play Dota against the AI?
Possibly, I think I did, but I can't remember like any detail about it.
So there's a character, Ursa, also known as Fuzzy Wuzzy. He's a character that deals so much burst damage that literally every game of Dota I played, you know, like all the older Dotas. I played against AI Plus back on Warcraft 3. In every single AI I've ever seen, that character and characters like him are not programmed against. He is a weak spot in every AI. He's a character that will deal, if you're at 80% health and he gets next to you, he will one-shot you. And this is something that the AI doesn't understand. As a player, you understand this. You will say, oh no, don't let that giant bear get close to me. As the AI, you say, ah, my health is 85%. I am safe.
Okay.
Or, you know, and it'll react when its health gets lower or something. Or maybe it'll pull one combo on you and say, oh, you're at 20% health and I'm still at 80. I'm going to win this. And, well, no, I'm a bear and you're dead.
Yeah, it sounds like this is a classic problem of really a lack of fully developed AIs. It sounds like the AI is being developed from a generalized point of view. So that AI is meant to be able to play at a level that can be okay against all the opponents, or I'm sorry, all the different classes.
Yeah, the majority of opponents, yeah.
But when you have something very specialized or very niche, it doesn't know what to do. It's just going to deal with its basic play. As you said, when you have a burst character like that, it doesn't understand that even though it's at 80%, you're going to use all your skills in like 1 second and kill the guy because he's just going to burst you down. And this is a good reference back to what you're saying with Rome Total War or Rome 2, where you had all those little perks and enhancements that the AI doesn't know or understand about, so that when you face against it, it's just designed against someone playing the game very basically or very general. But then when you start using all these little tips and tricks and there's nothing to compensate for it, you're just going to steamroll the hell out of it.
Yeah.
And
that's that's a long-term AI problem. I mean, it's happening in Total War. And Total War, like, yeah, the AI is really bad on a lot of levels. But also going to Endless Legends and something like Civilization, where those, you know, you see a bunch of people playing the AI on like divine difficulties, and you know, the AI itself on those games can't handle it.
Yeah.
It can't handle that basic setting. If you can get essentially your most efficient build and you're always just kind of like tweaking on it, you'll quickly ramp up far past what any general AI can take on you.
Yeah, and that's why with like Civilization, for example, Firaxis doesn't design higher intelligent AIs. They just simply give him more and more advantages to try and compensate. But as you said, because the basic game system zone change, someone who figures out the most optimal way of playing, they're just going to steamroll the hell out of it every time, because even if you give the AI more resources, they're not going to be playing it any better.
I actually prefer that AI more than any others. This also goes back to Total War. Everything goes back to that in AI. But in something like Company of Heroes and the Total War, I know the AI is not as good as me. I'm a human.
Yeah.
I can play 50 games and I'm getting better every game. That AI will stay the same. In those games, I don't want the AI to receive that unit, complete unit mechanic change advantage. I want them to have that percent science bonus or more money or something. Something where I can look at it as a player and say, I have 50 games of my rifleman fighting your rifleman. I know what will happen. Whereas if you have a system where the AI gets buffed units, you can say, you know, oh, I know what will happen when I send my rifleman against your rifleman. Oh, no, I don't. Your riflemen are stronger now. This doesn't work. Whereas something, you know, if it was just a money advantage, you could say, okay, you have two riflemen. How do I beat two riflemen?
I need to either do better in terms of micromanagement, or I need to get my economy better so that I can feel a different unit, or do something to compensate for that. But the rules haven't changed in that sense.
Yeah.
A rifleman is still going to beat an engineer. It's not like you're messing with the basic mechanics. And a quick example of that, did you ever play Age of Empires Online?
Online, I got super angry with the card unlock mechanic. Mm-hmm. So no. I'm going to go with no. But I didn't play Age of Empires.
When they did the MMO, or I'm sorry, the free-to-play version of that, the one by Robot Entertainment and Gas Power, they, at the higher difficulty levels, or the higher levels in the campaign, they introduced elite versions of units who would basically be able to take on enemies of their counter. So you could have an elite cavalry unit completely crush your spearmen, who would be the counter. So it basically just flipped all the rules on their side and made the game more about that meta of, oh, you need to give your spearmen higher up gear to compensate. But when you start messing with the basic rules that you as a developer have devised, it just, you know, throws everything out the window.
Yeah, you're playing a different game.
Yeah.
And that game is obviously not as well balanced as the first game was.
Mm-hmm. All right. I think I'm just about things. I mean, we could sit here and talk casually for like 2-3 hours. But is there any other topics regarding metagame, tactical, or strategy design that you want to bring up, Alex?
I would like for more people to try out strategy games in co-op. Mm. Please, people, play more. I need more resources devoted to co-op play. It's a different experience. Much in that there's two, you're almost like co-generals, and you get a lot more interesting strategic play simply because you don't know what that other side is doing exactly. So, for example, in something like Total War, this works very well because you have enough forces that you can divide them and just say, you know, I'll take the left side, you take the right side, or I'll take the main line and you take my flanking force. However, there are games that have this almost as a bullet point, but due to their difficulty, it doesn't work. I ended up playing Divinity with a co-op buddy, and the level of play required at all points was so high that neither of us could afford to make a mistake. It actually came down to one person playing the game and the other person kind of shuffling around watching. So there's definitely a time and a place for co-op games. And it is those less serious ones, but I will say, please, people, play more co-op games. The stats for XCOM are 11% launching multiplayer. Shogun 2, apparently 7% of people played a multiplayer match, and Rome 2, only 3%.
I think, as a quick comment, I think the problem with multiplayer strategy games is just the level of commitment required to play them. Like, I was trying to play a game of Civ 5 with a friend. We got, like, 2-3 hours in playing it. I was just like, oh my god, is this over yet? And and I think that's why a lot of the most popular multiplayer games are those built around very quick engagements. Like, a Hearthstone match is maybe between 10-15 minutes of play. A fighting game match is literally, like, 3 minutes, or the exact time the clock is. And so it gives you, like, a very quick engagement, then okay, you're done. Like, you don't need to sit and play a fighting game for like 5 hours to decide wins or loses. But when you're playing a strategy game, like with Civilization, that may or may not be the best example. It just goes on forever and ever and ever. And at some point, I think I was just like falling asleep at the keyboard between turns.
Oh, yeah, because your counterpart's turn would take you forever. And this is where that tactical strategy map really comes in play. Whereas something like Civilization, because the focus is so much on that strategy map, you're waiting so long for those turns. And there may be a time where you're at war and your buddy isn't. He's, you know, they're going to have to wait, you know, 5-10 minutes of just kind of sitting there. Whereas you take something like the Total War games or the War Game, European Escalation, and you've got that overmap. The overmap is made to take maybe 5 to 10 minutes a turn at most. Mm-hmm. And the meat of the game is still in that tactical layer where you're spending most of your time. Mm-hmm. So those games do hold up well. They almost play like a MOBA where you have maybe a 10, 15, 20 minute pre-session and then maybe a 30 minute tactical session, and then you're back out where you can save and stop.
Mm-hmm. So there's just like something that you can do at all times, whereas with a Civilization, you're just on hold while everyone else is making their move.
Yeah, and the main thing is having a strategic section that isn't the focus of your game. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, in Civ, the strategic section is 90-95% of the game. You know, it is a little tactical with your unit movement, but a lot of that can also be done by kind of eyeballing it and thinking during the other person's turn. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you got to watch out for something like Civ. Yeah, and which I've had very bad experiences with.
Yeah, and that's why I just cannot get into like the play-by-email form. I know a lot of people like to play strategy games by email where you email the file back and forth. And that, to me, is just like an even bigger slog than like the Civilization style, just sitting there for hours on end.
It works out a lot better on games with much longer turns and lower turn counts. Mm-hmm. I've played Dominions 4. And they had a wonderful automated system where you essentially you launch the game and you say, I'm connected to X game. Okay, is my turn ready? Yes or no? Mm-hmm. If your turn's ready, you can take your turn, which usually takes anywhere from 10 minutes to an hour, and then it sends it back up through its own server. Mm-hmm. So if you don't have to deal with finagling through your email and copy-pasting files, it can be a good alternative. However, the game or the developers have to have that system there, and that really helps out.
All right, I think with that, we can probably start to wrap it up. It's been a great conversation, Alex. I know this is your first time on the cast, and hopefully we can have you back on either with other guests or with other topics.
Yeah, if you're ever talking about terrible DLC or Left 4 Dead, come talk to me. Yeah. It was a great cast. It was much easier than I thought. Thank you.
Yeah, not a problem. All right, so with that, we're going to wrap things up. With this topic of strategic and tactical gameplay, there's definitely a lot there to discuss. And it's definitely one we can talk more about, especially with how different games implement. So hopefully we can return to it with a later cast. And with that, I am going to end things for this week's edition of the Percepta Podcast. Again, Alex, it was a pleasure talking to you. And we definitely need to, hopefully I can get you back into playing Payday 2, or we need to find another game to get everyone hooked on.
World of Warships is coming.
All right. Yeah, well, maybe we'll take a look at that. I don't want to bring up World Tanks, because that's 3 hours right there we could talk about. For those of you listening, thanks so much for tuning in. As always, if you'd like to contribute to Game Wisdom, we have several options available. If you'd like to write a guest piece for the site or be a future podcast guest, you can find all the information and links under Submissions Wanted on the front page. And if you'd like to contribute to our ongoing Patreon campaign, that is to secure some much-needed monthly funding for the site, you can find me on Patreon under Josh Beister or Game Wisdom, or check out the banner on the front page. Any donation would be greatly appreciated. And last but not least, if you'd like to catch me on Twitch, where I will be streaming games and talking about them usually every night around 10 Eastern, my channel is GW Beister, and all the videos and highlights get uploaded to the Game Wisdom YouTube channel, which you can easily find by searching for Game Wisdom. So, with that all said, I hope you enjoyed this topic and conversation about game design in the industry, and I will talk to you again next week. Take care, everybody.